This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 545, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you, live from San Diego Comic-Con. Fanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 545. We're coming to you live from San Diego Comic-Con. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Well, not 100% live, Connor. Let's be honest. I mean, I'm not there.
I'm recording live from the floor of Comic-Con. You can hear the din behind me as the loyal comic fans from all over the world have shown up to partake in their hobby choice.
I appreciate the dedication, but I'm pretty sure you're in a hotel room, and I'm pretty sure I'm not there. So live, I feel like we're not being totally honest in that assertion. So
back to you, Ron.
I mean, the important thing is that we don't have Josh this week because he arrived at San Diego and then was sucked in by the crowd, and you haven't seen him for days now, right?
I think he's in line for Naruto stuff.
Oh,
Naruto.
Right, that's what Naruto. Yeah, there you go. There's a 10-year-old joke.
That's the last time I saw him. I haven't seen him since. Hopefully he.
I know. We saw him at preview night, and he said, right, "Hang on, I'm gonna go catch that Pokemon." And then we just never saw him since. So yeah.
I saw him heading towards the dock, and he may have ended up in the ocean.
Okay, yeah. I mean, because when Josh plays Pokemon Go, he really plays Pokemon Go.
He's like, focused solely on that screen. He doesn't look at what's happening around him. Whether he's on some sort of boat launch or on a highway.
Yep.
Or on a cliff.
It's really tragic, really. Yeah. So, anyway.
All right, Josh. Love you. We are a fanboy, and we like comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics, even when we're at San Diego Comic-Con, and one of us picks their favorite book. Oh, by the way, could have used a few fewer comics for Comic-Con week.
Big week. Yeah.
It's like 20 books I had to cram in there on a Thursday afternoon. We had the pick of the week where we read the script. We'll talk about the book, that book we picked, other books. Some fun stuff. I've lost the script, but just go with me.
Ratings.
Maybe
ratings.
Listener mail. We'll do some ratings because there's some Rebirth books this week. And here's your spoiler warning. This is a review show. There'll be some spoilers this week. Thankfully, Ron had to pick.
I did. And it's a big Comic-Con week. And so there was a lot of big premieres, a lot of big launches. Not from every publisher, but this week the pick of the week goes to Black Hammer number 1, written by Jeff Lemire with art by Dean Ormston, with colors by Dave Stewart and letters by Todd Klein.
There's a little all-star team there.
A little all-star lineup. Yeah, so if you remember go back in the Wayback comics hype machine, this was announced a year ago maybe.
I have no recollection. I didn't know what this was when you picked it. I thought it was
It was announced a lot. So, like, remember the time period when Lemire pretty much shook out from DC And then he was, just working with anybody who would hire him. He went and did, he worked at Valiant, he was working at Marvel, right. He worked at Image, right. And you know, of course, Dark Horse got in on the action as well too. And they announced this book, Black Hammer Number One, and you know that Jeff would be writing and Dean Ormson would be drawing. And I don't really remember what it was. I just remember the title. And it just, you know, for whatever reason, never came out. Who knows if, you know, Jeff's schedule could build up or who knows why. But sure enough, here we are, San Diego Comic-Con week, live from the floor. Live from the floor, kind of. And the first issue launched, and I gotta admit, this was delightful.
Yes.
This was, did you get a chance to read it? Or?
Yes, once cool. You picked it, and I asked you what it was.
Yeah.
I did read it.
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
So like the thing about this was, is that, it feels as if Jeff Lemire was writing a Doom Patrol-esque superhero team as if they lived in Essex County.
Right. That's the vibe. And that's our favorite Jeff Lemire.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. There's a hint of sadness. There's a hint of sentiment. There's a hint of emotion, but it's also it's a superhero book. So the premise is that there's this group of powered beings are all living together on a farm. And
it's like a true story.
Yeah, true story. and they're just, you know, they're just living their lives, and we find out that it's the anniversary of 10 years prior to that when they saved the city and then they disappeared. And we, the reader, know that they didn't disappear, that they're living on this farm. But to the rest...
We know they're not dead. Everyone thinks they're dead because they disappeared, and they are somehow sequestered in this small town, whatever this small town may be.
Yeah.
Because they're not just on the farm. They go out for groceries. There's a restaurant.
Yeah.
They're in some sort of weird... small town. So there's a big mystery here. Why are they gone? Where are they stuck?
What happened?
Also, yep. The titular Black Hammer, or the titular Black Hammer character, is gone. He seems to be dead.
Yeah.
And that's the question of what happened to him.
Yeah. And so, I mean, and this really captured me. I mean, from the moment I opened the book and was able to see and looked online and stuff like that and saw the different variant covers and saw the cover Lemire drew, which really made me. I mean, Dean Ormston is very, very good, and I really enjoyed the art. But I couldn't help as I was reading this going, oh, I wish Lemire was drawing this.
Right.
But once again, for some reason, Lemire is not allowed to draw superhero comics. I don't understand why. actually, to be honest with you, I would really like to see Lemire draw something. It's been a while.
Dean Ormston is good.
Dean Ormston was great. Yeah, no, this is very, very good.
Style for this story, for Jeff Lemire's style. And this story,
yeah, and
very sort of indie comics.
Yeah, and I would also throw in a little Hellboy into the mix there. You know, not a lot, just maybe a pinch of Hellboy. You know, you got a heaping of Doom Patrol, you got a heaping of Essex County, you got a heaping of little Astro City, it gave me echoes of the End League, that book that Remender did at Dark Horse a while back. It definitely hit on those notes of, okay, this is a superhero legacy that has gone on that we're being introduced to. We've got a collection of characters that seem to be wildly, you know, like unique in different personalities. Each one seems to have a story. You know, why is the female character trapped in the body of a 9-year-old who smokes, which is funny. Right. Always funny. Make kids smoke. Why is the bearded guy all whacked out of his head? You know, like all like each character that are not only really well designed in terms of how they look, but also like leaving you with wondering, like, okay, why is this person like this? And you know, and the main guy keeping them all together, who's a little sweet toothy in that regard, you know, kind of, you know, the big tough kind of the tough guy with the big heart. Why are they forced to live on this farm? What happened? And I think that in terms of, and you know, we do, this does, you know, continue the grand tradition of the iFanboy pick of the week of being a number one issue. We do love our first issues. I thought this set it up perfectly in that, you know, it threw us into these characters, showed us the world they live in, and gave us just enough hints and just enough speculation about what had happened and where this might go to have me go, oh man, I can't wait for the next issue.
Yeah, there's a really intriguing mystery here. Every character has a story, and we get just a hint of that for everyone so that we want to know more. We don't know this, whatever this exile is, each one of these characters has been changed in a different way by it.
Yep.
And we want to know why. We want to know what happened. We want to know how they're going to get out of it or how they're going to deal with it. This is a really well-constructed first issue in terms of giving you I feel like I knew most – at least something about every character here.
Yep.
It wasn't one of those books where you get a first issue, you don't know anything about the character, so you wonder why would you keep reading here. There's just enough. This is the perfect kind of wheelhouse for Jeff Lemire.
Yeah, really, in terms of the first issue kind of the challenge of writing a first issue, Lemire Normson nailed it in terms of, you just enough to have you think. And the funny thing is that this was not, I did not read this. This was, I read it, but it wasn't originally on my pull list, actually. And I'd gone through all my books. I had picked another book to be pick of the week. I had the email to you, Connor, all written. And then either I saw it on Twitter or I don't know where I saw it, but I was like, oh, Black Hammer finally came out. Let me go check that out. And so I went back and checked it out. And as soon as I finished, I'm like, oh, forget that. This is the pick of the week. It was the last book I read, but it was also the one that had me the most excited and the most like, oh, wow, and talk about like something being worth the wait. So for those of you who might have, heard about this and thought about it and gave up waiting for it or whatnot, definitely give it a shot. It could be, and I don't know what to expect from this. I don't know if this is going to be I have no idea if this is a miniseries or an ongoing or how much Lemire is committed to it. He is very, very busy. He's got a very full schedule, and if it took a year to get this issue out, who knows how long it'll take to get the other ones out. But I would imagine we'll at least get a trade's worth out of it. And if you tell a nice complete story that even comes close to some of the emotions and some of the story, kind of points that the Essex County trilogy did for us, which is the kind of Lemire that we love the most.
Right.
This could be something that's really, really special.
I just hope it comes out on some sort of regular basis and we get to continue the story.
Yeah, I hope so too. But Black Hammer number one from Dark Horse. I strongly recommend everybody check it out and give it a read. So.
All right. So this week we had two DC Rebirth books come out, which means it's time for the rating segment.
Live from San Diego, ratings.
Live from San Diego. I'd like to set the stage for everyone. I'm standing in the middle of Hall H.
Yeah. Well, we'd arranged for the special iFanboy ratings panel.
Right. And if you recall, your older listeners, a young Al Franken.
Yep.
With satellite helmet. Saturday Night Live. That is what I'd like you to picture. right now, wearing a fanboy satellite on my head.
I'm in the middle.
Which I'm sure is not giving me any kind of brain radiation problems.
No, and it's crystal clear, Connor. We can hear you. We can see you. It's great. Amazing what they can do with technology these days.
Yeah, and it's what's great about the setup is you don't really get much of the background. Right now there's a lot of people in Hall H making a lot of noise. They're very excited for the rating segment, but you can't really hear it because that's how good the microphone is.
Well, yeah, it just shows you how far microphone technology has come since 1977. So
it's a very focused bubble that I can talk into. So now, in honor of our friends over at Mates, we do our rating segment, which we pick a comic, read a comic, rate a comic on the 5-point scale. And we begin with the Hellblazer Rebirth number one, written by Simon Oliver with art by Maura Tatt.
Yep.
And this is going to be a monthly series by the same creative team.
Okay.
What did you think?
It's unfortunate that Josh is not here, considering that he's the president of the National Hellblazer Fan Club.
Right.
But I thought this was fine. I'm not a terribly huge fan of Hellblazer. I don't know whether Simon Oliver is British or not, although that sounds like a British name.
Yeah,
I think he is actually. But this was just like a straight up Hellblazer story with like a really fast ending.
Right.
Like it felt like, oh shit, I gotta wrap this up. So let me just have this random thing happen and then whatever. But it was fine. I didn't.
Simon Oliver is British.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. What did you think of it, Connor?
It was fine. I can just say. Unfortunately, we are not the Hellblazer guys that Josh is. I've read a good amount of Hellblazer books. Not all of them, like Josh has. I read, all those Garth Ennis ones are wonderful. There's like five volumes of that. And I read random ones here and there, the Brian Azzarello stuff and some other random ones. But and I watched the TV show. Does that give me any cred?
No, it doesn't. In fact, that takes cred away from you.
Damn. Yeah. All right. Well, it was fine. I enjoyed it. The more taught art is always interesting. And that's really all I can say. It was a one shot sort of, you get a sense of who he is, you get a sense of his personality. If you know John Constantine or Constantine, there's probably nothing surprising here. You're going to learn.
Yeah,
stage for him. He returns to London after his exile in the United States, and John outsmarts a demon.
It was very pedestrian, I thought. And I don't mean that in a bad way. He arrives back in London, he fights a demon and then wins, you know, and smokes some cigarettes and there you go. And that's Hellblazer in a nutshell. I don't know. All right, so ratings.
I give it a three.
Yep.
Yeah.
So totally inoffensive, but nothing to celebrate. So
gonna stick with it?
No.
Okay. Probably not. No. Yeah. No. Let's just be.
Well, Josh will fill us in.
So. nothing against. I'm not a big Hellblazer guy.
My favorite is when Josh is off playing Pokemon Go, we can commit him to reading books.
Right. And so write this down, everyone.
Yeah, everyone. Let's keep Josh to it. He's reading the Hellblazer.
And keep tweeting at him and emailing in to remind him that he is going to be sticking with Hellblazer.
Tell him to put the Pokemon Go down and read some comics. So
let's next talk about Batgirl and the Birds of Prey Rebirth number 1, written by Julie Benson and Shauna Benson, with art by Claire Rowe. So this is an all-female story in our team.
And what's fascinating is that Julie Benson and Shauna Benson are not related.
Really?
No, I don't even know. I assume they are.
That would have been crazy.
I know, wouldn't it?
There was a lot of Yannick Paquette this week in covers and variant covers. I was very thrilled with everything.
A lot of Yannick.
Oh, Yannick Paquette. So in this issue, the Birds of Prey are relegated to and. Birds of Prey used to be the title, and now they're the and.
Well, they've mushed them in together, so there you go. Yeah. So
Julie Benson's a TV writer.
I just did the same thing. Both Julie and Shauna Benson are both writers on the 100, on CW. Yeah, they're TV writers, and now they're writing this comic together. And so this is really, I mean, this is fairly, you know, like Batgirl came up. Batgirl was one of the second wave hits of the New 52, right?
Right.
And so I feel like
with the Burnside version, the reimagined version.
Yeah, exactly. And so I feel like there's a lot of eyes on anything Batgirl in this new thing to see if they can continue the momentum. It is a Batman universe book, Connor. So what did you think of it?
Sort of similar to Hellblazer. Like, I thought it was fine. I think my biggest problem, as I said it before, is I don't really like that they are trying to be cramming in so much. So here we have a long recap of Batgirl's career. We go through the Killing Joke and all that stuff, and it's still all muddled as to what is and what isn't part of this world.
Yep.
I guess that's kind of the point of Rebirth, is that it's all muddled, and we'll get it shaken out next year during the big event that happens. That's my guess. But it always seemed to me that for the New 52 version, having her been Oracle, and the whole mystery here is that someone is the new Oracle, and that's made her angry because that was, you know, Barbara's thing.
Yeah.
And she reconvenes, excuse me, she reconvenes the Birds of Prey, which is her and Black Canary, and then also the Huntress ends up joining up to find out who this new Oracle is, and that's the story. But it just seems to me there's so much they're cramming into this short amount of time that the New 52 is supposed to have existed and been part of it. Her getting shot and then recovering is slightly a bridge too far, but anyway, when you get past that point, I enjoyed the second half more, in which, you know, the girls are all together and there's tension because, you know, the Huntress is not really part of their team and she's inserting herself into their investigation. And I like the interplay of the characters. I like these characters. I thought this Black Canary is actually a better version of Black Canary than I've seen in most of her other appearances. It was fun. I didn't love it. Didn't knock my socks off. I was always a big Birds of Prey fan. I was a big fan of that book. So I'm looking forward to reading more of this. But this was fine.
So you're going to stick with it?
That's a preview of our – yes, but I'll stick with it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So jump ahead there. All right. So ratings.
Well, what did you think of it?
I thought it was fine. I mean, like, I have absolutely nothing invested in these characters or in any of this stuff. I think the whole Batgirl – mishmash is confusing to somebody who hasn't been reading it or isn't aware. From what I know of Batgirl previously, the second wave New 52 that had so much popularity seemed a lot younger than the same Batgirl that was Oracle.
Right. She was like
yeah,
a college student there. So it's again, it's like, how did all this stuff happen?
Yeah,
in a span of, you know, she couldn't have been that young when she started being Batgirl. So it's, in the span of 5 years, it's just a lot to deal with.
Well, but, one word, Connor. Comics.
So. I liked the Claire Rowe art a lot.
I did, actually. And so that was the one thing I was going to say is that you know, I didn't have anything invested in it, but I enjoyed looking at it more than I enjoyed looking at Hellblazer.
I thought the scene where the Huntress kills the priest in the confessional was really well drawn.
Yep.
And also, I want to give credit to the color, Alan Pasquale, because the overlay.
Pasalacqua, he's great.
Pasalacqua. Yeah. The overlays of the shadows from the confessional screen on everything. It just looked really nice, I thought.
Yeah, it was good. So ratings. I'm going to give it a 3.5 with a little edge towards the art.
I will also give it a 3.5.
Interesting. All right. So we're in agreement. We'll see you next week. All right.
Because I love these characters, and you're not sticking with it.
I'm not sticking with it. Yeah. Okay. I only read so much. So.
Yes, I understand. Yeah. So that was the rating segment. Ratings.
So speaking of only reading so much, there was a couple of other new series that launched this week. Some high profile ones. Thought we'd touch on them. First up is Snot Girl, number one. From Image Comics and written by Brian Lee O'Malley of Scott Pilgrim fame, with art by Leslie Hung. Did you get a chance to read this, Connor?
I did.
Yeah.
I did read this.
I don't know what to make of this. I'll be honest.
Is every character supposed to be contemptible?
I think that's part of it.
Or am I just too old?
It was funny because yes, you're too old and I'm too old. And also we're probably not the target audience for this book. But I think what's interesting is that if you look at Scott Pilgrim as being the sum total of wacky Brian Lee O'Malley's mind while living in Toronto...
Yeah.
Since Scott Pilgrim finished and wrapped up and the movie came out, he relocated and lives in L.A.
Yes.
So I'm wondering how much of Snot Girl is representing Brian Lee O'Malley's experience in L.A. because it seems very Los Angeles.
So the story of Snot Girl is that she is a fashion blogger. Let that sink in for a second. She's a fashion blogger with allergy problems.
Yep.
So she gives nicknames to everyone, and she ends up getting the nickname Snot Girl, much to her chagrin. Now, there are things that I liked about this book.
I'll give them points for the last couple of pages.
That was certainly unexpected. We'll get to that in a second. But yeah. I did enjoy the examination of reality versus perception. So she, you know, she puts herself out there on social media. She's a fashion blogger. She's constantly tweeting and Instagramming stuff. But what she puts out there isn't the reality. The reality is she's not as put together as the image she puts out there. She's constantly sick from her allergies. She constantly has red eyes and runny nose. And I should just mention as an aside, as someone who suffers very bad allergies himself, I did relate to that. But also, if her snot is actually that green, she's got an infection and she needs to see a doctor. Because that's what green snot means. But I like that duality of, okay, so the image everyone thinks I am is actually not the reality. And I did like that examination. However, I just kind of wanted to throttle everyone in the book. Now that's because I'm old. But so the big twist in this is she meets Cool Girl, who's a sort of, you know, bohemian LA. She looks like she probably lives in Venice or Silver Lake. And she enthralls Snot Girl. She's in fact the one who gives Snot Girl her nickname. But the twist is they go to a bar, which apparently freaks out Snot Girl. She's never been to a bar. There's some very weird things that happen.
Yeah, it's a very odd.
And then Snot Girl goes. She has an allergy attack, so she goes to the bathroom to take her pills. You know, sort of a play on running to the bathroom to do drugs, and spills the pills. And then Cool Girl goes to check on her and slips on her pills and looks like falls.
Dies. Yeah.
And. What kind of pills are these? Are they marbles?
I don't know.
I don't think you can slip on Advil. I think you would just crush the pill with your foot.
Yeah, it was definitely like I definitely had to reread those pages and be like, oh wait a minute, what? Because also like
all of a sudden she was like just dead on the floor, and I said, wait a minute, did she just shoot that girl? What happened?
Did that just happen? Yeah. So I don't know if now the next issue is going to – I mean, we'll see what happens in the next issue, whether that A, that really happened, or B, whether she covers it up or deals with it or whatnot. But this is very odd, and Brian Lee O'Malley is odd, and so that kind of comes with the territory. But you know, I thought some of it, you know, like you said, I like the positioning of the main character and the issue, you know, of projecting this kind of image and really what you're like behind closed doors. I think that's really interesting. I you hate to see people. I mean, I guess you do what you know and all this sort of stuff. But I thought there was some little too much similarities to Scott Pilgrim for Mayo, and which he's never going to avoid, unfortunately. Right. But like just with establishing the characters and the different names and like the little bio things, it's like, all right, yeah, I know that you've done that. It definitely was full of energy. And apparently O'Malley also suffers from allergies as well, as he drew a little comic in the back of the pages of the book explaining his, you know, the use of an EpiPen and things like that. So,
well, what's interesting is that that was actually a really funny cartoon. Yeah. But we discussed – I don't think you were on the show at this point when we discussed his last book, Seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
The tough thing for me with Brian Lee O'Malley, and I really like his comics. You know, we sung the praises of Scott Pilgrim forever, and one of the best things. But if you recall, by the end of it, we really kind of hated all the characters.
Yeah.
And I really kind of hated all the characters in Seconds, even though it was a really well-done book. I really just don't. I don't know. There's something. There's some disconnect between me and the kind of people he writes about. In real life, I would just avoid.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily a fault of the book, because sometimes you need to read about characters you wouldn't necessarily socialize with. But it's tough for me because I'm just like, ugh.
Right.
You know, the whole time. But it's a world. I'm actually going to read the second one because there was, you know, the ending was very intriguing.
Yeah, and I actually found myself enjoying Leslie Hung's art more as it went along. Yeah.
Yeah, no, she's really good. And she's perfect for this kind of, you know, she looks kind of, you know, a little manga-y, but not really.
A little, it's like a little touch of manga, a little touch of indie, you know. Honestly, this book, I mean, yes, this book's published by Image, and we all know why or whatnot, but, like, honestly, this is an Oni book.
Right.
It looked like an Oni book. And so it definitely had that Oni Press kind of feel to it. And so,
well, what's great about the book coming out of Image is it's not a sci-fi book.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a hyper. I mean, basically, you know, Image is right now publishing like two or three kinds of books.
Yeah.
And it's mostly sci-fi action.
Yeah.
And it's nice there's some sort of romance, fashion blogger book coming out. Now, there's a death in it, but it's not, you know. I assume there's no aliens in this book.
Yeah, for now at least. Like in the fifth issue, that's what happens. So.
Right. All right. They come in the fifth issue. So yeah. Betty and Veronica number one. This is a big release from Archie Comics, written and drawn by Adam Hughes, the elusive Adam Hughes. And
so you're the bigger Archie fan. So I'm really curious what you think.
I'm a big Archie fan, but I'm even a bigger Adam Hughes fan. Going back to the '90s when he was became known when he took over Keith Giffen's Justice League.
Right.
And I was like, whoa, who is this? So ever since then, I've been a big Adam Hughes fan. This was really hard to read.
It was very hard to read.
We've discussed in the past when we talked about Jughead, how it's kind of bizarre that all these books don't fit together with the main book, and which is not necessarily a problem, except for they keep referencing each other, so... that's bizarre. But putting that aside, I really like Adam Hughes. We've interviewed him. You and I had dinner with him at Darwin Cook's wedding. We were sat next to him. Super nice guy. Super great guy. It just reads like middle-aged guy writing teenagers.
Yes. Well, okay. So I wanted to actually separate the discussion in that regard.
Okay.
Adam Hughes, I feel, is best known for his art.
Yes.
And so from an art standpoint, did it deliver for you?
I liked it.
Yeah.
He's still using a slightly different style to get the book out.
Yep.
Lot of the details is being made up, looks like, by the colorist.
It's not too – yeah, I noticed that as well, too. It's not too cheesecakey. You know, because he gets – I feel like Adam Hughes gets – you know, he's been doing so many pinups and all that sort of stuff. And him doing Betty and Veronica, people would go for the easy kind of –
there's a joke about that in the middle.
Yeah, I know.
Where they read the exposition in bikinis, but, you know, they're not exploitative bikinis or in an exploitative manner. And also, I was thinking about this as I was reading that joke. You know, Archie books are always kind of cheesecakey.
Yep.
With Betty and Veronica, and it's just the only reason no one talks about it is because they're drawn in a cartoony style.
Right.
But, you know, if half those covers are them in a bikini on a beach,
yeah,
that's just the way it goes. But I thought the art was really good.
Yeah. So now from a writing standpoint, it's just where it faltered. I mean, I haven't read as much of what Adam Hughes has written, if at all, if anything, before. I've always considered him to be an artist. Not to say that he can't write or shouldn't write or whatnot, but I mean, if I had to read his phonetically spelling WTF one more time, it was very hard to read. You know.
Well, it just the opening scene really put it off on a bad foot.
Yep.
In the very long conversation with Jughead, and Archie had just read completely false for two teenagers.
Yeah.
Even teenagers of 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, it just didn't it didn't read like two kids talking.
Yep.
There was also a big colloquial problem. I'm pretty sure Adam Hughes is from Georgia.
Right? Possibly, yeah.
He had that studio in Atlanta forever.
Yeah, yeah.
And at one point, Betty calls her grandmother Meemaw, which is not something anyone in the Northeast ever says.
Well, yeah.
I never even heard that term.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you know, Riverdale is in probably Long Island. It could be Westchester County. Either way, it's in the New York area.
Yeah.
No one in the New York area uses the term Meemaw.
Yeah.
No one.
Oh, geez.
It just doesn't happen.
That's very specific. I love it. So
it's just, but that's the kind of thing that stands out. It's like, okay, well, yes, that's a thing, a term used in certain parts of the country, but not in this part of the country.
Yeah,
and I'm surprised that got through the editorial.
Especially considering that Archie is located in Westchester County, that you think they'd be all over that. But yeah, so I'm not gonna. I read it out of curiosity. I will not be continuing with it. So
it's hard because you don't get a lot out of Hughes art.
Yeah,
but it was real hard to read.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. All right.
So,
well then.
Well, maybe I'll find out if Pops is saved. I also don't know how long this is going to go because I know he hates when people talk about it, but you know he's very slow.
Yeah. How long can you expect it to be on time and all that? I mean and that's really one of Archie's biggest failings is that they get a lot of attention around these launches and then it takes forever in between issues and then you just lose momentum. So yeah.
And I'm the kind of person willing to wait for Adam Hughes art, but it's tough on an ongoing.
Yeah.
So this week we saw Velvet 15 wrap up the Velvet.
Yep.
I mean, in the back they said there's going to be more Velvet, but they don't know when. And, you know, I'll believe it when I see it. Not that I think he's Ed Brubaker's not telling the truth, but he's got a lot of things going on.
Right. And this, you know, had a lot of delays going into it. It took a long time to get these 15 issues out, and which in Ed Brubaker's write-up towards the end, he takes ownership of that, which is fine. And honestly, I think, you know, I think it's been well worth the wait. I mean, reading this,
yes.
I mean, I thought this was a good wrap up. The story was told. It leaves the leaves the character Velvet in a place where they can pick her up later on. Every issue looked gorgeous. You know, and he says that him and Epting are working on something new, so I'm excited to see what that is. This is, you know, 15 issues. I can't complain about it. I thought it was great.
This is a great spy story. We get in this issue. Is it thicker than normal? It feels like it is.
A little bit. Yeah.
This issue, we find out what's been going on. The character of Velvet's been running around the world trying to figure out who killed her husband and also why they're trying to kill her. And we find out why in this issue. I'm not going to spoil it because a lot of people haven't read it. But it was a very satisfying twist. Not a twist, but a very satisfying reveal. The ending was satisfying. Taken as a whole, these 15 issues are going to read really great together.
Yeah.
It was hampered a little bit by the delays. And this is a book, you know, is where most of the characters are guys in suits, so you kind of forget names and who, you know, when they say a name, it feels like it should be important, you forget who they're talking about. But overall, when it was coming out, this is one of my favorite books, and I thought it wrapped up really well, which is not something you can say about every, you know, endings are hard. We often talk about how it, you know, the ending doesn't necessarily live up to it. I thought this ended really well.
Yeah, very good.
So I'm very happy with Velvet 15.
Excellent, excellent, excellent.
All right. We have news, breaking news, Ron, from the floor of the show.
Breaking news. Why don't you go for it?
We have, you know, every week on the show, we talk about how you can support the show at fanboy.com/support. And, of course, you can still go there and you can click on the Amazon link and you can make your purchases through Amazon. And some of you write in and ask if it's working. I made purchases. Is it happening? And I don't think we have that dashboard anymore, do we, Ron?
Well, no, we do. So the thing is that we can see what is purchased. We just can't see who is purchasing it due to privacy, which is fine.
We don't want to see anything you don't want us to see either. We don't need to see what you're buying.
Exactly.
But just assume if you're doing it, it's working.
Yeah, exactly.
There's some changes to the page.
Some big changes. So basically, what we've talked for the past couple of weeks or months that we've been working on some changes to the membership program. Those of you who are current members, we thank you for your ongoing support. Moving forward, we are shifting over the iFanboy membership program over to Patreon. Patreon is a platform that many of you are familiar of. We use it for Goodfellas Minute for people allowed to support there. Basically, in long story short, it's just a lot easier for us to maintain it and keep it running, and easier for you to maintain your support through Patreon.
You can make changes rather than emailing us.
Yeah.
And having us make changes to your membership.
Exactly.
You can get full control over it.
Exactly. So if you go to patreon.com/iFanboy, you can sign up there. And we're gonna do a write-up on this on the website, so for existing members can understand exactly how this transition is going to work and all stuff like that. But basically, if you are a current supporting member of iFanboy on PayPal, we ask that you go over to Patreon, sign up there, and either cancel your PayPal membership on your side or email us, and we will help you with the cancellation to do it all up. We're going to be sending an email to all existing members to help through this transition. It might be a little rough, but we know you want to help support us, and we appreciate that, so we'll try to make it as seamless as possible. If you aren't a current member, you can sign up over at patreon.com/iFanboy, and here's the thing. We've got a bunch of different levels where you can sign up to show your support. At $3 a month, which is the price of a comic book, which is the price of one comic book, you'll continue to get the podcast for free. And of course, we will thank you with our gratitude on a page on iFanboy.com. So you'll be published as a supporting member of the iFanboy community. At $5 a month, you'll get not only thanked on the website, but we'll thank you on this year's podcast. So there you go. So you can,
which anyone who listens to Goodfellas Minute knows.
We like to have fun with it.
Can be a fun time.
Yeah. Now, if you got a little more scratch and you want to show a little more support, for $10 a month, we'll thank you on the website and on the podcast, but we'll also send you some iFanboy stickers, some iFanboy buttons, as well as a comic book from our own collection, which is, you know, so you're gonna at least get $3 worth of a comic book back in the deal. And then finally, for $20 a month, not finally, but for $20 a month, you get the sticker, buttons, a comic, thank yous on the website, as well as a trade paperback from our collection. So you're getting iFanboy certified comics at $10 and $20 a month. And finally,
I'm not necessarily going to endorse everything I said.
Yeah, exactly. And finally, if you are an eccentric billionaire and you want to show your support of iFanboy, you can pay $1,000 a month and you'll get all that great stuff, as well as you can come on the show. We'll invite you on the show to be a guest on the show.
And we had one of those people on Goodfellas Minute. They supported us at the highest level, which we didn't think would actually happen, and they came on the show, and it was fun. They did a good job.
It was good stuff.
It was Jordan.
Now, as part of this, by moving our membership program up to Patreon, we're giving you guys incentives to support the show. We will have milestone goals, and every time we hit a goal, we will unlock something else that we'll do for the community. And so as of right now, the first two goals that we're tracking against is that if we get it to $250 a month of patron support, we will allow the paying members of the iFanboy membership to vote to add a book to the show each week. So you will decide what comic that we talk about on the show. We'll all read it, and we will tell you what we think of it. So that's pretty cool. We've never done that before. And also, if we get to $500 a month goal, we will do more Talksplodes. You know, Josh talked to Tom King and Mitch Gerrards, as well as Mark Miller, a couple weeks ago. We will commit to doing more Talksplodes in the future for you, because you are stepping up to support the show. So if you want to hear more creator interviews or interesting people interviews, help us get to $500 a month, and that will get you there. So
there you go.
And finally, if you don't want to sign up for a membership, if that's not your thing, but you do want to help support the show, you can still support through a direct donation via PayPal. That link will still be there. That link will still work. And we thank everybody who's done that. So exciting times. It's all going to be listed out on iFanboy.com support. If you have any questions, you can email us at contact@iFanboy.com. We'll be all over to help you out with this stuff. And we thank everybody in advance for their support. So
also, thanks for listening to that. You won't have to hear it again.
Exactly.
We're not going to go through that all again.
Yeah, no.
Let's talk about some more comics.
Okay, so Spider-Man number 6, Brian Michael Bendis, no Sara Pacelli. Art was by Nico Leone, and I
thought it was funny that we just talked about how it takes forever for these books to come out.
Yep.
This book, and it came out like 2 weeks in a row, or something like that.
Very, very quickly. And the thing is that not only did I miss Sara Pacelli a lot, like, she's really, like, her identity, I think, is her work on this book really, you know, is the identity of the book. I just don't like Miles in the mixed-in universe. It's just something's not fitting. A puzzle piece isn't fitting for me on this book.
I was really disappointed because I saw the cover and it said Bendis and Leone. I thought it was gonna be John Paul Leone.
Oh yeah, that would have been nice.
So I got super excited, and then I turned the page and I was like, oh
yeah. So it's rough. I don't know. I don't know what it is about the story. I don't know what it is about, you know, like, I mean, it's fine, but there's a little magic has gone to what was Ultimate Spider-Man. So,
right. So Batman number 3, Tom King and David Finch. I really enjoy this, but why do people keep going down dark alleys in Gotham City?
Yeah, you think that they'd learn by now.
They should have a PSA campaign, you know, put it on the subways.
Yep.
I grew up in New York City. You didn't go down dark alleys.
You would think at least the Wayne Foundation would add lights or do some sort of war. Yeah. So
I just saw this family turn on the dark alley, and I was like, why are you going down this? Oh, yeah. See, this is what happened. You go down the dark alley, and some guy with a gun shows up.
Yeah,
because I think every dark alley in Gotham has a guy with a gun waiting in it. But This is still fun. I just couldn't believe us. You know, yeah, I mean, it doesn't even look like an inviting alley. It's full of
it's not
trash and broken pieces of wood. I mean, stay out of the dark alleys.
It's good advice. They should listen to you.
Yes.
All new Wolverine number 10. Ig Guerra on art. Yep. Remember Ig Guerra from the Pet Avengers. This is a tie-in with Civil War II, and so I guess basically. Everybody in the Marvel Universe is this Ulysses Inhuman is going to see something bad about them, and Maria Hill's going to show up, and they're going to go fight him. Like that's what's happening. And
yeah, that seems to be happening in all of the crossovers this week.
Stupid. It's too much, and it's stupid. But that said, I really like the vibe of this book, and basically, the Inhuman sees Old Man Logan killing X-23's clone sister. And so that's why S.H.I.E.L.D. shows up this again, I think, is an example of how a big crossover like this just can kind of stab the momentum of a book that's going really well. So a little rough, but still enjoyable. All right, quickly in Star Wars Corner, Star Wars 21 with that amazing David Aja cover with all the stormtroopers. This kicks off the new storyline. Jason Aaron writing, of course, and Jorge Molina on art, doing his best Eminent impression, which honestly isn't that bad. And if you remember back early when Star Wars, when the comic first launched, I had a problem with Jason Aaron adding dialogue for a TIE fighter pilot.
Right.
And this whole issue focuses on a badass battalion of stormtroopers, and there's a lot of stormtrooper dialogue. And while I still wrestle with, I think stormtroopers don't talk.
Right, they just hit the floor.
That's exactly. They boom, stormtroopers hitting the floor. That said, this was kind of awesome and badass, and I'm excited for this arc. I don't know where this arc is going, but this whole little stormtrooper battalion was kick-ass. One stormtrooper had a lightsaber, which is crazy, and it was just it was a lot of fun. So I'm coming around on the stormtrooper dialogue, but I just don't like having stormtroopers having individual identities. You know, but Jason I've argued this with Jason. Jason makes his argument. He's like, well, you know, why wouldn't they? You know, they're people. You know, right. I was like, yeah, it's true. You know, just because we didn't hear him in the movie doesn't mean that they don't have inner monologue or talk to each other, which I think is fair.
Well, there was that one scene in the first movie where they talked about, was it cars they were talking about?
I don't know what it
was. Whatever they were talking about. It seemed like they're talking about, you know, did you see the new
something? Yeah.
Toyota, whatever it was. Do you send him detailed notes to every issue?
Sometimes.
Okay.
And finally, in the I Got This Corner, or as far as I could tell, I don't know if you saw any other ones, Connor, but the only offender this week was Scooby Apocalypse number 3, where who's the blonde? Fred. Fred says, I got this.
I didn't read this, obviously.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I missed the show 2 weeks ago when Josh did that aberration of a solo show. Did you know a Flintstone series came out and it was batshit crazy?
I'm not surprised.
We are definitely talking about Flintstones number 2 when that comes out. anyway.
I don't want to.
Oh, we will. Don't worry, we will. All right, so that wraps up the books that came out this week. So, Connor, you are on the floor at the exhibit hall right now. What booth are you standing near?
Ron, I'm on the floor of San Diego Comic-Con right now in the midst of all the madness, standing in front of the DC booth. I'd like to stand in the DC booth because, as everyone knows who goes to San Diego, that's where the best carpet is.
It is.
And lots of interest. Energy levels are high, and Everyone's having a great time.
So what are you seeing at San Diego Comic Con? What is the hot property? What is the, you know, give us the report from the show.
Well, of course, the big news this year has been that a lot of the movies didn't show up.
Yeah.
You know, which is has been the big draw, as we know, for the last 10 years of the show. But there seems to be no lack of interest in the show. There's still tons of people. You can't move around. It's, if anything, it feels more crowded. But, you know, everyone's having a great time. The thing about San Diego is everyone's having a great time.
Yeah.
All the time.
Have a good time all the time.
There's it's funny because the last show I did personally was E3 in LA, and video games right now are all about virtual reality, and now there's some virtual reality creeping into the comics world. There's at least two virtual reality stations I've seen so far on the floor.
Wow.
There's one in the DC booth. They're doing one for Batman Arkham, whatever the new game title is, and there was another one I saw. It's cool, you know. I've been tweeting out some photos from the floor. A lot more Batman animated toys coming out, which is exciting. If you like Wonder Woman, they have not only the costumes from the new Wonder Woman movie, but they have the Linda Carter original costume on display in the DC booth. They have Doctor Strange stuff at display in the Marvel booth. It's and the Star Wars booth is built like a Jedi temple. So it's the show you know and love, Ron. Yeah. If you've been there before, you've seen it. It's the same show, but it's still fun. I went to we're going to talk about this the special edition podcast, but I went to the Star Trek Beyond premiere on the first night, and that was tons of fun. We'll give an in-depth report on that during the show itself that we're going to do on it, yeah. But it's been fun.
You know? Yeah, no, and I saw on the first day of the show, Marvel TV made a big splash. The Luke Cage cast was there,
yes.
and they showed the teasers for Iron Fist and Defenders and all that sort of stuff. So I mean, again, we always say San Diego Comic Con is what you make of it, and if you're into comics, there's a lot of comic stuff to be had. So yeah,
there's a lot of great comic stuff to be had. You know, the joke was always if you get through the crowd of the TV toys section and you get to the comic section, there's a lot more room to move. But actually, the comic section was very, very crowded, very packed. Not nearly as many people playing Pokemon Go as I thought, or they're doing it very discreetly. So it's been a fun time, and you know, everyone's having a blast.
Excellent, excellent. Well, that's good. So you're glad you went. Your feet are all right.
My feet are okay. We've had some feet problems within our group. Some people wore the wrong shoes, but you know what you do for that is you go back to the hotel hot tub.
Yeah.
Which is, as you know, very exciting.
Yeah, indeed.
Let's do some emails. That's my quick report. I'll talk more. We have more thoughts, which are Star Trek related, so we'll talk about that on the Star Trek Special Edition show that's coming up. But one item of note.
Oh, yep.
It's been incredibly hot.
Oh, and wow. I know
the iFanboy hot joke, haha, but it's been in the 90s.
Wow.
Which, if you have to walk... If you walked from your hotel to the show, you get there and everyone is just drenched.
That's very un-San Diego-like.
Right. I remember the one year we came here and it was in the 60s and everyone was cold.
Yeah.
And we didn't bring any like warm clothes because we normally come at 75. But everyone in the show floor is drenched, which makes the usual convention funk even more pungent.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. So, lovely time. All right.
Lovely time.
Well, good. Well, have a good time. Survive. I'm enjoying not being there, so that's for sure. All right, so we promised last week we'd do some emails, and we got a couple of good ones, so let's get through them quickly because we're running out of time, and I know you got to get back to you got to get off that floor before your power cuts out.
But, I'm being told by security to move, and so I'm moving now as you read.
All right, so first email's from Jared from Indiana, and he says, reverse Jared here. In my travels in time through the Pick of the Week podcast, I made it to episode 339, which seems to be when everyone started measuring how long they thought about questions. It seemed like the appropriate time to step off the cosmic treadmill and really spend some time pondering a topic. So this question I've been thinking about since June of 2012 is this.
Wow.
Before we get to his question, I feel like we should address that. I went back and looked at episode number 339 of iFanboy, and I believe he is correct. That might be the first mention of thinking about things.
Wow.
And Connor, if you remember, our own origin of that happened probably around March or April or May of that year.
Yes.
So this show came out in June 2012, and the description of the show is, you know, Josh, Connor, and Ron have really been thinking about comics lately, and I mean really thinking about comics, like for hours, just so you know, mulling over comics and what they could be, like really thinking about them.
Yeah, that I think that's the first time.
So there we go. So for those of you wondering where the origin of the thinking about comics joke came from, it's June 2012. So, all right, so good job, Jared. So his question is, I was reading some older Doctor Strange comics and noticing how he doesn't really have a defined power set. Would you rather read about a character who has defined powers, or do you like it when a character's powers are more mysterious? Which I think is a very good question, because for me it's a little bit of both. Because
yeah, it's a little column A, little column B.
Yeah, because here's the thing: is that I really like I'm a big old Ohatmu fan. You know, Marvel Handbook of the Marvel Universe. I really like reading, you know, the trading cards, understanding like this is this guy's power or whatever. What drives me crazy is when writers create a power or randomly give them some ability to get out of a situation that isn't that hasn't been documented or doesn't go with that character previously.
Right.
I don't like it when powers are used as you know, as MacGuffins.
Right. Or Deus Ex Machinas.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I would lean more towards you want to know what characters can do, but on the other hand, there's always fun and surprise.
I mean,
but comics tend to be pretty rigid. I mean, you had years of those Marvel handbooks and where powers weren't even not only listed, but they were measured and you know, DC Who's Who. I mean, most characters have a pretty well defined power set. I mean, Doctor Strange is mystical. With mystical characters, you kind of can do anything because it's magic.
Yeah,
but for the most part, I don't think this is really an issue.
Well, I mean, and the thing is that, like, going back on the X-Men history, like, the X-Men's always had very defined powers. You know, Cyclops shot optic blasts, Nightcrawler teleported or whatever. And then when Grant Morrison came along and added the secondary mutation, now you had, and I could also do this, and I could also do this. And part of that, I think, is from 30-plus years of writing the same powers over and over again. Let's give this new things to do. So I think it's a balance. I think it's got to be somewhat within the realm of believability for the character and not just as a Deus Ex Machina to get out of a situation. I think that would be key.
Yeah, and with Doctor Strange, you can basically have him read any spell that can do anything in terms of magic. And that's fine with me because he's a magician.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, as long as there's a spell for it, why not? It makes sense for his character. Now, I'm by no means a Doctor Strange expert, but I feel like the whole spelling out what book he's reading and what spell he's reading from which book that Bendis has been doing is a fairly new thing.
Yeah,
and, it is. I actually really like that because it gives a sense of, oh, he's not just waving his hands around and something happens. He's actually drawing from somewhere.
Yeah.
And, I don't know.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm being jostled a lot on the floor.
Oh, okay.
It's hard to think. No, someone almost knocked the satellite off my head, which I had to recover from. But,
okay. All right, good. Well, do you have time for one more question?
Yes, Ian from Staten Island. The most important thing for you to know is that I've been thinking about this since 2010 because I have moved for school and worked for the Kalamazoo, Michigan, to Detroit, back to Kalamazoo, then to Boston, and now finally Staten Island. So he's gone from Kalamazoo, Michigan to Detroit to Kalamazoo to Boston and now Staten Island.
Yes, wow, that's quite the journey, Ian.
He says, as my friends and I were unpacking, I realized that lugging around the books is getting silly. My job and lifestyle is me traveling weekly and moving locations almost every 2 years. Before I moved each time, I've tried to donate at least 2 boxes. This is, however, not a feasible lifestyle anymore, so I'm making the switch to digital. I'm trying to offload my books and hoping to make some money on my collection. My question for you is this. Have you got rid of old comic issues that either either gone back and bought collected editions or the digital copies of those books you got rid of? I don't want to lose these stories, but moving 12 boxes again is a nightmare. And I know that the best stories are the ones worth the most in my collection. So he wants to know.
Yeah, we gotten rid of comics and then replaced them with the collected editions. So you recently got rid of your issues, right?
Yeah, in December, I donated almost all of my single issues to charity. I guess it was about 30 long boxes.
Yeah.
But I haven't specifically gone back and purchased them. Now, DC's been really great lately. We haven't really talked about this, but they've been on a tear with their collections. They're putting out all these crazy omnibus from the silver, gold and silver and Bronze Age stuff. They're collecting all kinds of Batman stuff from the 90s that I never thought would get collected. So I'm sort of by default getting them, but I haven't been specifically going, oh, I need to get that because I gave that away. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I've just been getting it because I like them.
Right.
but I haven't done that. So you, Ron.
So, Ian's email resonated for me because I've recently moved. And in moving, you know, Ian, that's cute. You moved 12 boxes. That's very, very cute. Try moving about 70. And that's just my long boxes of comics, not to mention the 30 to 40 boxes of trades and hardcovers and things like that. So needless to say, I can definitely relate to your issue, your quandary. Because of that, I'm actually getting rid of all my issues. I'm actually in the process of a combination of selling and donating and getting rid of them. And I actually have no plans to replace them with collected editions, mainly because, like, I just don't have time to go back and reread. You know, like, if I want to reread something, I might go and buy it then when the thought strikes me. But I'm not proactively doing it just because the whole point is that I need the room, and B, I don't have the time.
Are you keeping anything?
I am keeping my run of Uncanny X-Men. I've got a select stack of books like New Mutants 87 and New Mutants 98 and the Speedy shooting up Green Arrow and my Nova number one and, you know, like things like that, like my collection ones. Mm-hmm. But the thousands and thousands and thousands of filler, the DC 1 million event issues and things like that.
Come on, you're not going to reread those?
Yeah, no, I'm not. those I will gladly hope they find a new home. So, yeah. Well, wow. It's tough. I think it's a point. I mean, I've been collecting since the 80s. It's a lot of crap, and space is at a premium now, and time is at even more of a premium. So, but yeah, I'm keeping all my trade paperbacks and hardcovers. I'm also keeping a select stack of comics to give to patrons, to iFanboy members, so I will be keeping those as well. I don't really need to go back and reread, you know, Mutant Massacre. You know, I read it a lot, so. But I'll be able to because I'm keeping my issues. So.
And so you're not going to specifically buy a collected version of, say, DC 1 million?
No,
shelf.
No, not unless I'm like, you know, I really want to read DC 1 million. Then I might go buy the digital edition or buy the collected edition. But I'm not going through and going, okay, I'm getting rid of Spider-Man, you know, Brand New Day. I need to buy all those trades. Like, nope. They're like TV episodes. Nope.
This is giving me a good idea for your birthday.
Oh, okay.
For Christmas.
There you go.
Just DC 1 million trades for the
rest. Excellent. Fantastic. Love that event. I love the cover. Was that Ryan Hughes covers?
I'm gonna just buy you collections of DC event, like unheralded DC events,
like late '90s, early 2000s DC events. Please.
Bloodlines.
Yep.
I would say Millennium, but that was actually a really good event. Like just whatever I can find.
The Tangent Universe. Do you remember that? The fifth week event. Yeah. So
let's do that. Forever.
All right. So if you have any questions, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. Please, when you write in, tell us who you are, where you're from, and how long you've thought about it, and keep it brief. And if you'd like to send in a audio mail, you can send along a MP3 or a wave or something like that of you talking to us, and we'll get that on the show as well too. Thank you for everyone who's wrote in. contact@ifanboy.com.
So one of the things that's happening at San Diego Comic Con, I can report to you live, is that Batman the Killing Joke is premiering here, and that is the latest DC Universe animated original film. It stars Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill reprising their roles of Batman and the Joker for this adaptation of the Alan Moore classic story. They're showing it here, and now I know from the very, 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 very many PR emails I get, they're also showing it at some movie theaters across the country for two nights only. We're going to do a show, as we've done for every DC Universe animated original film, on this next couple of weeks. It's not going to come out probably not exactly when the movie launches, just for various logistical reasons, but it'll be happening in the next 2 weeks.
Cool. That'll be exciting. And what will be happening sooner than that is, like you mentioned, the aforementioned earlier on the show, special edition podcast talking about Star Trek Beyond, which also premiered, it already premiered at Comic-Con. You were in the audience at the premiere.
I was there. I was in the second row.
Yeah, wow. And
I was 6 feet from Idris Elba.
Oh, jeez. That's brilliant.
You know what I noticed about him?
What'd you notice?
He was wearing if you saw my Instagram, he was wearing a summer cool outfit. He had shorts and a shirt on, where everyone else had a suit, and everyone was talking about it. I own almost exactly that same shirt, almost exactly the same shorts, and I do not look like that wearing.
I was gonna say, who wore it better?
He did. I mean, yeah. It's not even close. Ask everybody.
Yeah.
He's very handsome. That's all I'm saying.
That's awesome. So Star Trek Beyond is out. I'm going to see it. You'll see it. Mike Romo will see it. I don't know if we're going to get Mike on the podcast.
Yeah, he's very excited. Cool. He's very excited.
Yeah, so we're gonna get that, and that's going to probably, due to San Diego Comic-Con, that's going to come out next week. We're going to get it out for you as quickly as possible. But I'm very excited for the movie, so I'm excited to talk about it. So.
And finally, Goodfellas Minute. We mention it every week. It's the show we did earlier in the year where we talked about Goodfellas 1 minute at a time, me and Josh and Ron and a cavalcade of special guests. And it's evergreen. So if you are just discovering it now, as we constantly have people telling us, we just got an email this morning from someone who just discovered it. You can go check it out at goodfellasminute.com or wherever you get your podcasts. It's a show that will be there as long as we can host it. And we really enjoyed it, and we hope you give it a listen.
Excellent. And that said, go over to ifanboy.com where you can comment on this podcast. So now we have fixed the bug. So those of you who wanted to sign up for an account so you can comment, you're able to do that. Let people know what you thought of this week's books. If we didn't talk about any other comics that you enjoyed, let people know. And over at ifanboy.com, you can find links to all the other previous podcasts. If you want to go back in the archives to hear how long we've been thinking about things or other movies or things like that, they're all there. All at ifanboy.com. And of course, you go to ifanboy.com/support, as we mentioned earlier, where you can sign up for the brand new ifanboy membership program via Patreon. You can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/ifanboy and on Twitter at ifanboy. And you can follow us individually. I am at RonXO and Connor is at CS Kilpatrick.
And you can leave a memorial message for Josh at J Flanagan.
If you wanted to. Yeah.
Yeah, just should have looked out for the pier, Josh.
Yeah.
Finally, if you like the show, write a review on iTunes. That's how people find podcasts. Better yet, you can tell your friends about the show. Tell your mom. I mean, we've been just tell her. You've been waiting and putting it off. First of all, call your mom. Second of all, when you're calling your mom and you're getting the update on your family, tell her about the podcast you've been listening to and how she should check it out. And that's just really the best thing you can do.
Yep.
Help us spread the iFanboy love all across the world. Ron, that's it for this week's show. I'm reporting live from the floor of the Comic-Con. And and everything's going well here. I'll have more for you next week.
All right, continue to have fun. Go to Hodad's, have a burger.
I don't know. The last time we did that, we all really felt our age.
All right, so until then, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor. See you next week.
Da-da-da-da-da.